I think that readers need to understand that they're not going to get a diverse viewpoint when they read these types of outlets. They're only going to find things that either confirm the outlet's view or possibly confirm their own point of view as well.
Echo chambers, emerging media, a fractured, depleted local political news landscape, and yes, even the rise of pink slime. The WUNC Politics Podcast begins now. Hey, I'm Jeff Tiberi. The North Carolina political news media has felt a tectonic shift in recent decades. Long gone is an era of only traditional outlets, newspaper, TV, and some radio, reporting on state government. What was once a state capitol press corps with dozens of journalists and bureaus serving outlets across the state is now diminished. Cities like Charlotte, Raleigh, and even Winston-Salem that once had multiple daily papers now have one consolidated outlet or rely heavily on the Associated Press for local coverage. Our state's political news media is a series of tributaries, all connected to the giant pool that is North Carolina politics. This series of waterways has existed for a long time. However, the map is getting more cluttered. You know some of these streams by their letters, WRAL, NNO, WUNC. Then there are some newer creeks in the form of online-only and/or nonprofit news organizations. Think North Carolina Health News, Carolina Public Press, and a new outlet that debuted just last month, The Assembly. And still additional streams in this ecosystem. There is coverage from long-established partisan outlets like Carolina Journal and NC Policy Watch. More recently, some sites, backed by dark money, have been flooding Facebook. And just how partisan they are isn't obvious to an average reader. While each outlet has its own tributary, ultimately the water connects us all to a shared political pool as an informed public. But these waters are increasingly murky. And in this era of disinformation, echo chambers, and an increased media distrust, this isn't necessarily a great thing. News consumers need to be increasingly savvy about understanding the priorities of the platforms behind the content they're consuming and taking on the work of media literacy. Today, a few perspectives. In a bit, a researcher from Columbia University's Journalism School. First, the journalist's point of view. Kate Martin, in my humble opinion, is one of the best journalists in North Carolina. She's methodical, immensely thoughtful, and a public records hawk, attuned to fairness. Kate has worked in both traditional news media, newspapers, as well as now for a small nonprofit outpost. She's the lead investigative reporter for Carolina Public Press.
Nonprofit news within the last couple of decades, you know, before that it wasn't very common at all. And so I see the nonprofit model definitely as a more modern invention.
Your mission as a journalist is what?
I want to give people the information they need so that they can live their lives. People who are employed, who are taking care of their kids and ferrying them to soccer practice or whatever, they don't have all of this time to go dig through records and find corruption, or they don't have the access to ask the governor questions on a press conference. When I'm doing these things, I'm thinking about, you know, what is a reasonable person wanting to know about this topic? And that's how I frame my work.
But at times, holding that mission has meant powering through some barriers along the way. Back in the early aughts, Kate worked for a newspaper in Loveland, Colorado. That's about an hour north of Denver. And it was there, while working for that paper, that she uncovered a misuse of federal campaign funds by a local congresswoman.
And when I started writing up this story and the owners found out, they were enraged and we never ended up publishing the story. You know, I could hear them yelling at my bosses through the wall. And, you know, it was very frustrating as a young reporter, I'll admit. I was only a couple of years into my job and I was almost considering quitting at that point. But I also feel like journalists have faced these challenges before, and this isn't necessarily a new thing. But I think that readers need to understand that they're not going to get a diverse viewpoint when they read these types of outlets. They're only going to find things that either confirm the outlet's view or possibly confirm their own point of view as well.
So if you're giving this example of a traditional newspaper that said, we're not doing that story on this particular congresswoman, can you say with confidence, with optimism, that that's not happening with regularity at the News and Observer, or RAL, or WUNC, or Carolina Public Press?
I don't think, no, not for CPP at all. And I'd be shocked if it were for the News and Observer also, or WRAL, or any of the big media outlets here. I really feel like there's equal criticism to go around for all parties politically for the larger newspapers. Now, just to put this in perspective, there's newspapers in very rural areas who are incredibly dependent on the government for things like legal advertising or for different types of things that they're required to print, or where they're the only outlet in the county. And there are reasons why publishers in those rural areas, and I'm not just talking North Carolina, where they try to avoid the ire of the local people in power so that they can keep getting money for their journalism and their newspapers.
When functioning properly, a robust political news media holds those in power accountable, municipal, state, and federal officials. Our democracy is stronger with a thriving array of journalists across the country. And yes, if I need to concede it, I'm hardly an unbiased source on this point. But unfortunately, there are swaths of our state with limited local news. 6 counties in North Carolina do not have a single newspaper. More than half of North Carolina's 100 counties have just one. The dearth of eyes and ears from reporters makes it easier, perhaps even more inviting, for those in positions of power to pursue the nefarious without repercussion. There are fewer reporters roaming state capitals and city halls as well.
Journalism is waning just because of the sheer number of jobs that have been lost across the country. And I just want to reiterate that we're not getting those back. Nonprofit media is not going to be able to pick that up. Think about the rural areas in North Carolina that have lost journalists or have closed newspapers entirely. You don't have enough population in some of those areas to support a nonprofit newsroom, let alone a single reporter. You just don't. It's not going to happen.
While there is an abundance of reporters on Capitol Hill, there are only about 500 reporters in total based at state houses across the country. And that figure is from a couple of years ago. I was unable to locate a more recent estimate, but it likely hasn't changed much. As newspapers have consolidated, they've eliminated beat reporting positions, and much of the work has not been replaced. Some replacements have emerged, websites with sound journalism, like Carolina Public Press. Then there are nebulous sites, declaring to be independent news, but funded in mysterious ways.
I mean, we have fewer reporters. I'm sure we're missing things throughout all of our legislation. There's probably things that we don't notice until years after the fact when we start looking into it. And what this means is you have basically an opening for other outlets to come in and say, oh, well, you have fewer legislative reporters. Well, let's send somebody in. Let's do some reporting. And, you know, they may not be affiliated with traditional media. They may not be affiliated with a transparent nonprofit like Carolina Public Press is. They may be have some sort of political affiliation that they don't necessarily disclose or are upfront about.
Cardinal and Pine is a relatively new player in the North Carolina political news media landscape. It's a 501c4 organization. That's the same IRS code used by so-called dark money super PACs. Cardinal and Pine produces lots of stories about Democrats, and the organization spends significant money advertising their content on Facebook, more than $1.3 million in the last 9 months.
And I think about that amount of money and how many journalists that would have paid for. And that's pretty astonishing to me. I mean, if Carolina Public Press had $1 million to spend on journalists, I'll tell you, we wouldn't be spending it on Facebook advertising.
People should ask where their news is coming from, and they should make sure that the people behind it are putting out factual, credible information.
On Tuesday, I spoke with Cardinal and Pine managing editor Billy Ball. I asked him to respond to this description of his organization and also comment on Cardinal and Pine's funding source and how that influences the ability of the organization to independently report the news. Cardinal and Pine falls under the Courier Newsroom umbrella. Courier is funded by Acronym, a dark money group that supports progressive causes and candidates.
Quite frankly, I think dark money is problematic, but I also think that it is the law right now. And you know, I think there've been a lot of conversations about this at the national level. And, you know, I could state my personal opinion, not my opinion as an employee of Courier Newsroom or at Cardinal and Pine. I think that it would be good for everyone if we eventually see Citizens United overturned and a change in the way that this is done. But I also think that we have to be able to compete with the way that people are raising money to deceive people. And let me make this point really clearly, and I think that this is really important. And I have zero contact with those people funding Acronym, with people funding Courier Newsroom. I have zero contact, and that's the way it should be. I have no intention of talking to them. I don't want to know what their goals are for our coverage, because we make our coverage right here in North Carolina, and it's not directed from outside. So I think that yes, I would concede that I think dark money in general is problematic. But at the same time, I think there's something to be said for following people who are veterans and have made a career out of this in North Carolina. And the minute that somebody who was a funder tried to approach me and said, hey, this is what we want you to cover, this is what we want you to say, that'd be the day that I wasn't here anymore.
One example of a similar 501c4 outlet on the political right is the Center Square. They're affiliated with a conservative organization from the Midwest. However, Billy Ball distinguishes them as different, pointing out that Cardinal and Pine has 4 full-time reporters on the ground here in North Carolina. And I'll note, for comparison's sake, that Center Square has spent a very small fraction on Facebook advertising. There is another brightening blip elsewhere in this transforming media landscape: automated story generation websites. Hundreds of these exist across the country. They're called pink slime journalism.
It's just a torrent of information that might not actually be useful, but it's just there. It fills the page, it fills the waves, as it were.
Pri Bengani is a senior research fellow at the Tau Center for Digital Journalism at Columbia University.
It's not local. It's not, you know, local journalism, a big part of it is people who are within the community writing about that community. This takes a step away from all of that. And instead, all it does is just try to churn out as many stories as possible, focusing a lot more on quantity than quality. Their presence on social media is minimal, if any. But there are a few examples that we've seen where they do have political motivations.
For the record, I think these sites should just be called pink slime. Drop the journalism. One of the biggest outlets of this type is Metric Media.
Nationally, they have almost 1,300 sites that we have in our data set.
Here in North Carolina, Metric Media has nearly 50 sites. They have names that sound like local news: Rocky Mount Today and Gastonia Times.
These outlets, from what I can tell, is they're both mostly satellite offices and freelancers. They aren't folks embedded in the community. So even though they're carrying the look and feel of local news, they aren't really local news. Local news does a lot more than simply, you know, churn out statistics or use tabulated data to create stories, which is what these people are doing. I almost think that as local news is struggling to find a business model, it's opportunistic for something like this to come in and try to take its place. But it also does a great disservice to the community, Because at the end of the day, it's just not community driven.
These dozens of sites are ambiguous. In the About Us section of their webpage, it's hard to decipher much.
Most journalistic organizations will either specify who their funders are, often they'll have a list of everybody who's given them more than a certain amount of money that could influence their coverage. We don't see any of that over here. What we do know is they obviously rely a lot on ad money, which, you know, anybody can make money off ads on the internet. The other thing we know is that they rely heavily on templated content. So if there's a publicly available data set anywhere, they can just create a story of that. And they can create like tens of thousands of stories of that.
There's probably some overlap and some gray area here. But as we think about misinformation and spinning conspiracy theories, just to lay it out, are we talking about misinformation when we talk about pink slime? Or are we largely, are those two generally separate categories?
To what extent do you want to give people the benefit of the doubt comes into play here? So, for example, the Milwaukee City Wire during the election week, you know, when you had all the claims around voter fraud going around, they had a story of theirs fact-checked by PolitiFact, which stated that more people voted than were in the city, or that were in that specific county even. So you did have a couple of examples like that. But the other side of it is also where the content itself has a conservative angle. And what I mean by that is you literally have a headline that says, North Carolina representative, the left might cheat again and defeat us. North Carolina Republican, what the Democrats are doing to our election is outrageous. So that's not outright misinformation or disinformation, but it very clearly has a partisan bent.
Are there best practices? Are there tips? Are there things, I realize there are things you can do, but are there things that realistically we can recommend to people for them to decipher quickly or in a reasonable amount of time if this is reputable or if this is trash?
I think for people to be familiar with their news sources is important. If they haven't seen something before, they should probably do some due diligence in order to make sure whether it's legitimate or not. As things are getting more partisan, people are seeking out material they agree with. It would behoove everyone to try to not do that, which I appreciate is much easier said than done. Media literacy is hard on a good day. Social media makes it harder. On a Facebook news feed, you have all content looks the same. And that's a problem on the Facebook side because Facebook lets you self-identify as a media organization. If people are redirected to a website and, you know, what's the saying? If it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. There's an element of that here, right? Where if it looks like a local news site, it probably is a local news site. And if we had a thriving local news ecosystem, it would be a lot less concerning. But in the absence of a thriving local news system, you know, the Tao Center's been tracking closures and layoffs and furloughs since the beginning of the pandemic, and almost 100 news organizations have closed in the US in the last year. So when you start trying to, you know, put those things together, I think that's what makes it more concerning.
I asked Kate what she thought about these pink slime sites and whether their shady About Us pages are problematic.
When you're ignoring a certain part of the issues, how informed can the audience really be? And I think people need to be skeptical when they look at these types of outlets. You look at who's writing the article. You look at who's paying for the journalism. There's a lot of misinformation out there. And I feel like some of the misinformation, it's going above and beyond sort of the conversation that we're talking about. But what you want to look for in verifying information is, one, who is the reporter? Is there a byline? Maybe Google the reporter's name to see what else they've worked on. Who is the news outlet? Have they been in existence for a long time or for any amount of time? What other stuff do they write? There's things that you can do to verify this, whether an outlet is providing a truthful view of things.
But Kate believes there is a silver lining to the state of political news media, collaborations.
It's tough to find a silver lining, but one that I can think of is in the contraction of media across the state, I feel that a lot of us have started to work together more. There have been more partnerships. In 2019, we published a series called Seeking Conviction, where we partnered with almost a dozen media outlets to examine prosecution rates for sexual assault. We've also created, in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, the North Carolina Watchdog Reporting Network. It's a partnership of about 8 news outlets throughout the state, including WUNC. And I feel like working together in these times where there's far fewer reporters has helped us produce better journalism than if we were to do this by ourselves.
Also worth noting is the organization Report for America. It's a national service program that places young journalists in newsrooms across the country. Last spring, Report for America announced it would fund 225 reporter positions at news outlets throughout the United States. 3 of those reporters are located here in North Carolina. And in the name of transparency, I do donate each month to Carolina Public Press and North Carolina Health News. Producer Charlie Shelton Ormond helped put this episode together. In a couple of weeks, we are going to revisit the North Carolina political media landscape and turn our attention toward news deserts, community journalism, and the delight of social media. My name is Jeff Tiberi, reminding you to subscribe to the WUNC Politics Podcast at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, wherever it is that you do on-demand listening. Listen to WUNC's special release of Pauly, and also check out the latest episodes from Tested, Embodied, and Dating While Gray. We'll talk to you again on Friday when we review some of what happened in North Carolina political news in recent days. Thanks for listening. Thank you.